7:44. So much to unpack from yesterday and look forward to, hopefully, today on the inter-Korean front. But at the same time, among critics, there might be this overarching sense of, well, what's really changed? Let's get into that question. After the welcoming gestures, Chairman Kim Jong-un embracing South Korean President Moon Jae-in at Sunan Airport in Pyongyang yesterday, they had the car parade, we had hundreds of thousands of North Koreans out on the streets, genuinely, seemingly happy to see President Moon there. Dr. Wong Young-sik, Research Fellow at Yonsei University Institute for North Korean Studies, is on the line. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
This is the third inter-Korean summit of the year. It's also the third inter-Korean summit ever to be held in Pyongyang, but the first in over a decade. If you were to compare this one with, say, the atmosphere in 2007 or even in 2000, what would you suggest would be where we should be identifying similarities or otherwise?
The impulse of the Kim Jong-un leadership to portray his regime and his country as a normal country by international standards seems to predominate the entire scene of the first day of the third meeting between President Moon Jae-in and Chairman Kim Jong-un. For instance, Mr. Kim Jong-un welcomed and greeted the president and the first lady in accordance with the international protocol, such as the 21 salutes, fires, and the show of the military, as well as the first lady spent time together, just like in any other summit meetings between the leaders of the normal countries. And for the first time, the foreign minister of South Korea is part of the delegation to Pyongyang. So overall, there is a clear intention of Kim Jong-un leadership to take this opportunity to show the world that North Korea is a normal country. So negotiating with North Korea for mutually needed goals is still very possible and necessary.
So we're really reading into everything. Everything seems to have some significance, including what you just briefly mentioned there, the First Lady's meeting. It's actually the first time for a North Korean First Lady to welcome a South Korean counterpart. And
there are a lot of firsts, including the car parade, right?
So many
welcome President Moon Jae-in and their leaders at the car parade. I mean, there was very reminiscent of my old days during the Park Chung-hee and Chun Doo-hwan government, to when we were mobilized to create the foreign dignitaries.
So you're saying that this is kind of like trying to portray itself as an ordinary global state with regular protocols?
Definitely, right. So North Korea is not a cheater, or North Korea is not an outlier or a rogue state, but North Korea can be a negotiation partner with the United States. So decision in favor of military operation or walking away from the initial result of the Singapore summit meeting between DPRK and U.S. is premature.
What about the selection of counterparts to those accompanying President Moon Jae-in? I mean, he himself spoke with leader Kim Jong-un, but he was accompanied by Chung Hee-yong and Seo-hoon, and Chairman Kim sat together with Kim Yo-jong and Kim Yong-chol. Was that surprising at all?
That doesn't surprise me, because they were the main pointsmen, so to speak, not only for inter-Korean negotiations, but also the negotiation between Pyongyang and Washington. But what I'm paying increasing attention to is the role and influence of Mr. Kim Yong-chol as a main man sitting next to Chairman Kim Jong-un. Because Kim Yong-chol is not a guy who is responsible for foreign affairs. He's not an expert on denuclearization. He's not an expert on negotiation with the United States. He has served as the main man of the reconnaissance and provocations to South Korea and the United States. So unless we see the rise of foreign ministry guys, such as Mr. Lee Soo-young or Lee Yong-ho, exercising more influence and having more presence in the next future negotiations with South Korea, China, and the United States, North Korea will remain quite reluctant to actually carry out concrete steps toward the complete denuclearization, which the United States is demanding.
Dr. Bong, thank you very much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Dr. Bong Yong-sik, research fellow at Yonsei University Institute for North Korean Studies, and we're hearing those other big names mentioned there, the US and China. And we still wonder what can really be achieved in this week's summit. For example, when we talk about boosting inter-Korean cooperation, just imagine how far that could go if you had US backing for it. But without US support, it's hard to maneuver within the sanctions regime. We're told at official level Seoul and Washington are in lockstep on that front. Well, let's continue our conversation with Suzanne Schultz, President of the Defense Forum Foundation, Chair of the North Korea Freedom Coalition and winner of the Seoul Peace Prize. Thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
I mean, just speaking quickly on that note of the U.S., do you think that it's important the U.S. plays the sort of realistic or even bad cop, if you like, in this scenario so that the Koreans don't get too carried away?
Well, I think that what Trump gave at their summit, the Trump-Kim summit, he gave Kim Jong-un an option. Open up, reform, complete verifiable, irreversible dismantlement of your nuclear program, and there will be peace and prosperity. I mean, he just laid it out. And I think that we see they're not letting up on the sanctions because we don't see any real development on the ending of their nuclear program.
On the one hand, this summit may help revive U.S.-North Korea dialogue. On the other hand, you know, it requires U.S.-North Korea dialogue. Is there anything else meaningful that this week can achieve?
Well, I'm won the Seoul Peace Prize. I'm a human rights activist, so I'm going to just take this from that perspective for just a moment. I know that President Moon wrote in the guest book in North Korea, "Peace and prosperity, the heart of the nation is one." And I absolutely believe that sane, good people believe in peace and prosperity. But what Kim Jong-un is not seeking is peace and prosperity for the people of North Korea. I'm very pessimistic about what's happening. I think this is a con. I think that North Korea is following the same patterns of the past to make promises, to open up, but not doing anything to help the dire circumstances facing the people of North Korea. And I just want to just say it's really important to remember this. This is a regime that's committing crimes against humanity every day. This is a regime that was cited for gross violations of human rights that are unparalleled. We cannot forget that in the smiling faces of the people at these summits. We cannot forget the fact that there are men, women, and children suffering in political prison camps, that there are refugees that are being forced back from China to North Korea who will be brutally tortured and imprisoned simply because they were trying to get to their families in South Korea. We can't lose sight of that.
Yeah.
And that the reason why I'm pessimistic about these summits is because we haven't seen any change in the behavior of North Korea. Let's just have them show us one sign. Stop killing people because they're trying to get to South Korea. Let humanitarian aid be delivered to the re-education camps. Stop criminalizing freedom of speech, the freedom of movement. People in North Korea can't even travel freely from one city to the next. So there's all these things that are happening that we cannot ignore. And I would like to see some progress, some good signs come from North Korea before we get caught up in these summits, which don't seem to be accomplishing anything and seem to be part of North Korea's pattern.
And I know, in an ideal world, and perhaps you would suggest in the only world we should accept, we would tie human rights issues to denuclearization talks. But realists would say North Korea is just never going to accept that road? What, you know, what would you say to those who suggest, well, it's better to have a hug in Pyongyang and see the smiles with the hope that later sufficiently North Korea can open up and we can make headway on human rights?
Well, I would say this. The whole reason why I got involved in the human rights issues is because our foundation was chiefly involved in promoting a strong national defense, American security. But it is a fact that all the regimes that are a threat to world peace, all the regimes that are terrifying the world with weapons of mass destruction, have one thing in common. They're also terrorizing their own people. So the human rights issues are totally linked to what Kim is doing in threatening South Korea and destabilizing the region. Proliferating weapons of mass destruction is totally linked. And I think it's really important to continue to address these human rights issues. We have got to give the people of North Korea an understanding that we know they're suffering. And this goes for people in the regime. I have a lot of compassion for the elites in the regime as well, because they wake up every morning with a horrible choice.
Yeah.
To vote themselves to Kim Jong-un or see their families murdered in front of them. That's the only choice they see.
Well, you might extend that sympathy even to his own wife, First Lady Lee Seol-joo. And you look at the faces of these people smiling, and it is difficult to reconcile with the ideas that you're mentioning. I just want to finish with one idea to ask you about. People talk about China as a model for North Korea to follow, but while that might be a good thing in economic terms, does that worry you on the human rights front, given, you know, how difficult it is even just to deal with China?
You have brought up an excellent point, because the whole opening up of China, we were supposed to see, you know, reforms, but China is a brutal dictatorship, and we have people have proffered from China's, you know, having business with China, but at the great expense of the people of China. And you're absolutely right. That is something, it's a very cautionary note, because China is becoming such a threat, and they're certainly very much involved in making sure that Kim Jong-un stays in power. They've been subverting the sanctions, and they're relieving stress on the regime by forcing the refugees back that are trying to escape.
Is that one of the many areas of concern? We're out of time. Suzanne Schultz, President of the Defense Forum Foundation, Chair of the North Korea Freedom Coalition, thank you.
Thank you.